You're listening to the American in Paris podcast, the podcast for those interested in the expat perspective on the City of Light on the AMDG radio network. And now, your host.
It's my great pleasure to be in the presence of the one, the only, Jason McDonald, who I've been trying to sit down and talk about life in France with for some time now. It's hard to keep up with him. He's globetrotting. He's setting up a business in Europe. And before we get to his journey here in France, if you could tell our audience, Jason, a little bit about who you are and what you do here in France.
Wow, the one and only. I probably owe you a little bit of cash after that introduction. Thank you very much for that. Basically, my wife and I have been in France now for about 14 months. That's this time around. I lived in Toulouse, France, back in the early thousands for about a year and a half, and that's where I met my wife. She's French. And since then, we've lived in the States, but we decided about 2 years ago that we wanted to look at coming back to France. And my company actually decided to open an international office here in France, and so it was a good fix. I spoke French, and I knew the business well, and so we decided to open another branch of our marketing agency out here. So I work for StreamCan Interactive, and we are a digital marketing agency that works with European startups and growing companies to market to the United States. We have been an official French company since April, and we're growing and having fun and going against the pervasive knowledge that it's impossible to start a business in France. We're doing it, and we're doing well, and we're enjoying it.
So that kind of segues into my first question, Jason. You make it sound like it fell together, and maybe it did. Maybe, you know, your company wanted to start a business, you guys had a French background, but can you take us back to right before StreamCan decides to open that office? Where are you guys in terms of France or some other country on your horizon? You know, what made it possible for you even to think about a relocation, especially to here?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I would have to take a step back and say that, you know, my wife and I are going to celebrate 11 years together this October. She's from about 2 hours south of Paris. It's a little town called Bourges. And they, you know, we spent our summers and holidays coming back to France. We'd spend anywhere from a month and a half in France through all of our vacation time. It was very important for us to kind of be in France as often as possible. And it wasn't a joke. It was very, very serious discussion, but we always said we would never live in Paris. My impression of Paris is we're leaving the Phoenix airport, which if you've never been there, they say it's the friendliest airport in the United States. It's beautiful. It's clean. It's organized. And you leave that just kind of pristine kind of example of an airport. And then you land in Charles de Gaulle, which I'm pretty sure was designed to infuriate anyone who has to visit this airport. I mean, it doesn't make sense. There's no logic to how it's set up. You have to wait longer for your bags than the flight took. It's a horrible experience. So you're in Charles de Gaulle, then your father-in-law picks you up and you drive through Paris traffic and you feel like you're going to die the entire time you're in the car. You finally get out of town, 2 hours later, bumper to bumper traffic, and you get to Bourges, and it's just, you're in the countryside, you're on the eastern tip of the Loire Valley, it's gorgeous, it's beautiful, and you're like, why would anybody, if they had the choice to live in France, ever want to live in Paris? It's just hell. And so, we never had any intention of ever moving to Paris, but we did want to move to France at some point. My wife being French and having spent such a long time in the U.S., it kind of seemed like one of those things as a relationship you have to talk about. And, we'd never lived in France as adults, and it was kind of that thing where you don't want to be, 65 years old and look back and say, we never tried it, we regret it. So it was kind of one of those regret things. So it was always on our horizon. And so when the opportunity came up to possibly move to Europe with StreamCan, we kind of jumped at the idea, but it was, you had to move to a major city, and that's Paris. Luckily, really good friends of ours we've been really close with for a long time moved from Toulouse to Paris. And we're kind of like, yeah, guys, it's not as horrible as we thought it was. And so we visited them actually the summer before.
Which is a big tribute because people from Toulouse are very proud of.
Yeah, and still are. I mean, they're still Toulousian, and they're a mixed couple like we are. She's American and he's French. And they're like, you know, Paris, if you can get a decent apartment, I mean, the apartment's key and the location of the apartment's key. But if you can take care of that, you know, it's really not that bad of a place. And so we visited them and we spent a couple days with them and saw, you know, it's Paris isn't, you know, if you've been in New York, you know, it's just a big city. If you've been to Chicago, it's a big city, or LA. But Paris, it's actually like a ton of little neighborhoods kind of smashed together once you kind of learn that quartier lifestyle. And so we saw that, you know, they'd go downstairs basically, and they would buy meat from their butcher, and then they'd go across the street and they'd get their baguette, and, you know, the grocery store was just a little bit further down, and then the Picao, which is like a frozen food place, is even a little bit further, and you're back to the house, you know, 10 minutes later, and you've done all your grocery shopping, and every time you walk into, you know, one of these shops, they're like, oh, bonjour, monsieur, vous allez bien? It's this very small town atmosphere.
And you and I have even run into each other just randomly.
Right on the metro, yeah. We don't even live remotely close to each other.
It's just a small town. I think that's people have this idea, and they're thinking of the greater Paris metro area, which is enormous.
It's huge,
but
yeah.
Paris itself, the 20 arrondissement, it's not a large footprint. You can really get
I've walked from end to end in a day.
You could.
Yeah, and so once we saw that, we said, okay, well, maybe we can do this Paris thing. And so we were open to that. And so when the opportunity came, when it arose, my wife was lucky. She was able to transfer with her job. And I was lucky I was able to transfer with my job. And so we said, well, hell, you know, we don't have kids yet. Let's go.
Yeah,
for
it. I want to get back to that later in today, because it seems like there are people say, well, that's nice for Jason. His wife was able to transfer. He was able to transfer. He had these sort of opportunities. And I don't think you or I want to paint the picture that basically everything's got to line up, because you also had to do a lot of work apart from those things. But so you got here and you had to start the European branch of your company from scratch. Your wife had to acclimatize to a new office, a new way of doing things, quite different from the American office. Politics, etc. And we're 14 months in. So I want to take a macro view, 10,000 foot view. Biggest changes for your life in general, and you know, in either personally, business wise. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
That's a big question, because you know. Moving to France is just, I'm coming from Phoenix, Arizona, where, you know, it's technically the, I think, fifth or sixth largest city in the United States, but it's not a big city. It's a lot of people that live in the same area. You know, it's not a huge city. So I think just moving to Paris is hugely different. But I think the first thing that comes to mind for me is my social life. So living in Paris, it took us a little while to acclimate to it, but it's hard not to want to grab a, you know, coffee and sit down and read your newspaper in the morning at one of the beautiful cafes if the sun's out. It's hard not to want to meet with friends for a drink after work. It's difficult on Thursday night not to go out to dinner, because I live on a street. I'm not joking with you. There are literally 24 crêperies on my street, and my street is maybe 110 yards long. I mean, there are restaurants everywhere. I live in the crepe area of Paris. But, I mean, you're walking past all these great restaurants and these great things. I mean, it's just, so we spend a lot more time out. Whereas in Phoenix, you would have had to drive to go to dinner every night. And then your wife is also driving, so she would have to meet you at home. And you guys would get into one car. And as you drove to, you know, the restaurant, you'd be discussing who's drinking and who's not drinking that night. Well, now I'm downstairs below my apartment at the bar, and it's not a problem who's having another drink. You know,
you can make it back.
We're going to make it home safe, and we're not going to have a DWI. And so that's really changed for us. And the metro just makes it so easy to get around town and to, you know, meet up with friends and that sort of thing. And it's a very social culture. And I'd say on top of that, we spend a lot of our weekends outside of Paris. I mean, we just got round trip tickets to London, for both of us. I think it was 115 euros, like $140. And I mean, from Phoenix to San Diego was more expensive than that. So, I mean, I can visit London for a weekend cheaper than I could. You know, I could get to San Francisco for the weekend from Phoenix. So just the cheap air flights, and if you're looking out for deals on the trains, you can get around. So, I mean, we spent all summer spending our weekends in these great cities all over Europe. And, you know, so we're more active. We visit more. I just feel like we're experiencing more on a daily basis than we did in the U.S. And then I think from a business standpoint, everything's different. France is just 100% a different climate than it is in the U.S. And that's one of my selling points for the companies. We always tell the French companies, you know, we're going to help you market to the U.S. And usually I'll just start talking with them about the differences I've noticed between French business culture and the U.S. business culture. And they realize how many there are. And they're like, yes, I need your, you know, I need your assistance in this because it's very different. But one of the crazy things that I think, you know, it still shocks me. I'm a Walking Dead fan. I don't know if you guys watch that on AMC. But that's what August is. It's like the Walking Dead. There's nobody in Paris. I mean, the whole city shuts down. And, you know, you always hear that cliche that they take the month off. And it's not.
Well, you don't.
It's
you
so
don't realize
true.
It until you're here. You're thinking, oh yeah, sure. A few people leave, and everyone, your dry cleaners are gone. Your
yep.
your fruit person's gone.
Your butcher's closed.
Gone,
your bread's closed.
Everybody's gone.
Yeah. So I mean, just it's just bizarre. I mean, I came from a culture where I had 2 weeks vacation, and you took them, you know, as additional days on your weekends, you know, and they take 3 to 4 weeks off at a time, and so you just have, there's different business flows. But what it really forces you to do is really consider, okay, are we doing this right? You know, maybe we should be taking 3 weeks off and kind of enough time that we forget our email login because it's been so long. So, you know, those sorts of things have been just different for us. And we're learning to kind of go with the flow and, you know, not think that one place is better than the other. It's just they're different and you need to enjoy aspects of both of them.
Well, this is a podcast and people haven't had a chance to know you. But one of the things that I noticed I told you about, something I've noticed in myself, is we both lost weight.
Yes.
And,
yes.
And I wouldn't argue that we are, I don't think you would have made the case or that I would have made the case that I live this typically American obese lifestyle. I don't know what your life was like in Phoenix, but mine when I was living in Kansas City a couple years ago, wasn't going to McDonald's every night or not exercising. It just, over time, habits creep up and you gain weight.
Yeah.
And can you speak a little bit about, you know, the plan of move to France, drop a bunch of weight?
Yeah, no, I mean, it wasn't really part of the plan. I think it was hard. I gained a lot of weight, actually. I moved to France and I gained a lot of weight the first couple months. And it was because you're walking past a bakery and you're pretty sure your French is getting better and you're pretty sure that croissant just told you to eat it. So you got to go back and eat it. But once you realize, hey, I live here now and I can get that croissant whenever I want, you start to kind of regulate yourself and get better. And once that happens, you know, I think the biggest change for my food eating habits is that we spend more money on our food than we do in the States, a lot more, not just because the euro is more expensive, but I'm going to wait in line at the butcher and get a nice cut of beef than I'm going to get something that's prepackaged at the store. I mean, there's fresh product everywhere. And so we've kind of changed our entire diets around to eat those fresh products, not because we want to be, you know, kind of hippie, you know, we got to eat better, but because it tastes better. You know, that's what it's about. And I told you earlier, I mean, we eat out at restaurants all the time. The portions are just different sizes here. I mean, I rarely leave a restaurant hungry, but I rarely leave a restaurant like sick. Whereas in the States, I mean,
or with a doggy bag for that.
Oh yeah, never a doggy bag. Which, you know, a friend of mine was trying to send me home with cookies the other day, and she's like, "Oh, you can eat them tomorrow." I'm like, "No, I'll eat them on the metro. Like, don't give me food to take with me. Like, I don't need food to take with me." And so yeah, just little things like that start changing. And you know, I think we talked. I mean, I've lost 25 pounds in the last 5 months, and I don't feel like I've really done a lot of effort to do it. You know, so yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, how un-American to actually add more time to your schedule or add more money. I mean, you don't want to just get everything at Target and go home and make life easy. I'm thinking about how this reflects on your business as well, because as you say, Stringcan's trying to help Europeans with not just how to market to Americans, but to get what I think one of the things we do well, I think because we work too much, as Americans, is social media. We get what that is. And what's been the challenge for you in just having that discussion with them, and it doesn't have to be about social media, about having that American attitude in business when you are shedding some American attitudes personally? How does that interplay work?
So yeah, I'd love to answer that. But before I jump into that, I just want to address something that I've noticed and I've had to kind of change my thought process on is, yes, Americans work a lot. And we work consistently a lot, like we're in the marathon of working. Whereas I feel like the French are very much in the sprint type of working where, I mean, my wife works for a large, large company and we figured that she would move here and work less. And she works probably about 20 to 30% more here in France when she's working. But she does. She gets that 7 weeks of vacation, you know. So I really feel that that's something that I had to kind of pick up, is that the French, they start a little later. You know, they start at 9 o'clock in the morning, you know, instead of 8 like we would in Phoenix. But they go till 8 or 9 o'clock, and you're at dinner at 10. You know what I mean? So there's these long days. They put in long hours. And I think, like, overall, yes, per hour, we put out a lot more work. We put out a lot more hours. But and I would say we'd probably get a little bit more done in the year than the French do, but not a lot. Like, I think the French are just, they work really, really hard, but then they take the whole month of August off. And then and you see that in the business cycles, and we're learning that here at StreamCan. I mean, we were killing ourselves the first, you know, in August, the first year, because we're like, why aren't things getting going here? You know, this is
Your expectations are different.
Exactly.
For an American, we're like, this is what needs to be in this amount of time, and that's just not realistic.
It's like, I feel like in the U.S., we're in fifth gear all the time, and the French will drop down in the first once in a while, and we just don't do that. And so it's just different rhythms. So I always kind of push back on the fact that the French don't work. I think they're very hard workers, and I enjoy working with them. But then to go back to your question about kind of the differences between how Americans look at marketing, I guess. Is that kind of what you were touching on with social media?
Because you're taking on some French attitudes personally, but I think you're pushing some American perspectives in the business.
Right, and I would argue too, you know, when you're marketing, you need to market to the right people. So if you're going to market to Americans, you need to market how they're used to being marketed to. So you're a big soccer fan, so I'm going to see what you think about this. So this summer was amazing. I got to watch almost every World Cup game, and it was just a great World Cup if you watched it. You know, last games, whatever, they weren't that great. But up to it, there was just some amazing football. And so I didn't want to miss any games. So I was watching most of them on French TV, but then a couple of them I'd have to watch on ESPN. I'm not going to explain how I got to watch them on ESPN, but
so you can neither confirm nor deny.
Yeah, that I watched them on ESPN from France. But so basically, though, I'm watching the exact same product being presented by the Americans, by the French, and about probably game six, it dawned on me. I'm like, this is an amazing case study on the difference between marketing in the U.S. and marketing in France. So for those of you who've never been to Europe, when you're watching TV, so you're watching the soccer game, and it's got the score on the board, and that's it, and the timer, and that's all that's going on. Then it's halftime. They're going to have a little bit of, you know, two people sitting there talking about the game, what's going on. Then they go to commercial, and before they go to commercial, there's this little, like, thing that's like, hey, everybody, it's going to commercial now. You're about to be advertised to. Then it's advertisements. Then, okay, commercials are over. We are going back to the show. And so it goes back to the show. And, you know, then it goes on. And then I'm watching the American TV, and then you're watching it in the scoreboard, and then all of a sudden, like, the McDonald's logo pops out on the side of the scoreboard. And then at the bottom, it's like
the crawl.
Yeah, down at the bottom, it's like, tweet us at, you know, at Coca-Cola for your best player. And it's, you know, and then you're like, wow, we're being marketed to the entire game. Then it goes to the post, not the post game, but like the halftime report, and it's Lexi Lawler, and he's talking about, you know, the game, and you're watching him in his suit. And then, I mean, if you like reach down to grab your drink and you look up again, now he's in a car, driving a car, and you're like, you know, you're not paying attention really. And now it's a Toyota commercial with Lexi Lawler in it. There was this like seamless transition from you know, the show to the marketing, and then all of a sudden you're back on the show again. And Americans are just used to being screamed at constantly with marketing, whereas the French are very, I mean, you'll be in the supermarket and there'll be music playing, and then they're going to switch to some commercials in the supermarket, and they'll be like, publicity, like alerts that you're about to be marketed to while you're in the supermarket. And so it's just this huge difference between how the Americans are marketed to and how the French are. And so I think that you have to be so much more aggressive when you market to an American, because it's so noisy in the space that they're in, that and aggressive in a way that maybe you're not the loudest, but you need to be the smartest, and you need to be the newest, and you need to be the...
You need to pour ice on your head.
Yeah, you got to do something that hasn't been done before. Whereas in France, it's kind of like, you know, like, you just need to market. Like, it's
well, there's some things that are not, like, they don't allow you to market.
Exactly.
It's illegal for you to market.
So it's just, it's completely different worlds. And so it's been really fun for us to kind of explore that and to, you know, kind of see the differences between the two countries and to help French companies kind of move into it. Because it's hard for them sometimes. We're like, no, you guys gotta push it. You know, you gotta be a little more aggressive here. And once they do it and they see the results, it's kind of like, oh, okay, I see how that works, you know. So, yeah, that's been different. But I do say that I have gotten into a few conversations with my team in the States where I'm kind of like, I don't know if we're ready for that. And they're like, come on, man, you're being too French. So you're right. I think it's going to be interesting. You know, I think if we do this interview in 5 years to see where I'm at, I'm probably going to lose all my American edge. But hopefully my team in the States will keep me straight. So I hope that answers your question.
No, it does. Well, and I suppose that can give us a bit of a look back. You talk about your team in the States. Anything, is there anything that you miss, and we'll, so we can start with business and then transition to personal, anything you miss about ways of doing business that you're comfortable with and you really like in America? And I'm not saying that the French do it wrong and the Americans do it right. I'm saying, are there things that you miss in business, and are there things you miss personally? And you can include, you know, brands and certain items that you can buy as well that are just not available
here. So I think from the business side, there's two things I think of right away. So the first thing is just, it's working with the team and it's working with my team. I miss them. I mean, that's just, that's the way it is. I mean, we still Skype and we FaceTime and all that stuff. But just, there's something about working with people that you're familiar with and understand you, and you can get stuff done. My team now in France is growing, and that's made things a lot easier. I think maybe I'm talking more from a startup than I am from, you know, being in France and being in the U.S. So I missed my team early on. That was hard to kind of be out here on your own.
And how often were you going back to Arizona?
Last year I went back once. I'm going to go back once this year. So,
okay,
I mean,
so
that,
not often at all?
No, once
so
a year.
It's all virtual?
All virtual, yep. And that wasn't the plan, but it's just things got so busy here quicker than we expected. And so we just kind of changed it up.
And was like, are you doing Skype or phone calls? Or?
We do Skype and GoToMeeting.
Okay.
So the GoToMeeting usually so we can share screens and kind of take stuff over and kind of collaborate. But it's been a good experience. We've gotten good at it. You know, now it's almost familiar. You know, you just, yeah. So I've got like team meetings. They set up a computer and I can see the whole team and I feel like I'm in
the meeting. Arizona's what, 8 hours behind?
Nine.
Okay, so you're 9 hours behind. So that's a bit of management as well, isn't it?
My days are long. I mean, like, especially today, my first meeting was at 8:15. So I left the house at 7:30 and I'll probably have another meeting with my team tonight after this podcast. So, I mean, my last, you know, that'll be an 8 to 9 o'clock day, you know, so those are tough sometimes, but totally worth it. Love what I'm doing. So, but from a business standpoint, and I think it's maybe not things that I miss. I think what I miss is not being I'm a very loud person. I'm very outgoing. I like to kind of, that's my personality. And I think having to do business in France definitely makes me a little more timid. You know, I don't have the confidence when in a French, you know, conversation as I would in an English conversation. So that's been interesting for me. But the thing that...
So you miss being yourself a little bit?
I do. And my wife even says it. She's like, oh, don't speak French anymore. I want my American husband. You know what I mean? She kind of... I'm a different person.
Your American husband as opposed to the French husband.
My American husband is cracking jokes and loud and the kind of, you know, loudest person in the room, whereas the French person's like asking small questions and sitting and listening a lot, you know, and she's just not used to it. But in business, the thing that I had the hardest time kind of adapting to, and I'm still adapting to this, you can ask anyone that works directly with me, is I'm way too direct for French business. So a good example for that is, you know, maybe I have this like really light contact with somebody at a networking event and I want to meet with them in person. So I would email them right after the event. Hey, it was good meeting you. I think we should sit down and have coffee. Here are 4 dates that work for me. Let me know if that works for you. Let's get together. States, nobody would bat an eye at it. They'd either say, I don't want to meet with this guy and ignore my email, or they'd say, oh, I'm available Wednesday. All right, let's meet this guy. In France, it's like, what? Like, you are taking a lot of liberty here.
It's like, you want to get married.
Yeah,
you know?
They're just like, we need to dance a few more times. And, you know, and I think that's, it's like that across the board with business. I was having meetings early on and I would call my boss and be like, yeah, I think we sold it. We're good to go here. And 6 months later, I'm still like meeting with these people. My boss is like, stop meeting with them. You're wasting your time. It's just different here. It takes, you have to.
The sales cycle is just,
it's
much
so much longer. And they, the reason it's different, it took me a while to get this, but once you're a partner, it's probably because they've done their due diligence and they've really gotten to get to know you. But once you become a partner, you stay a partner. I mean, I think I've only been here a year and we haven't like lost clients yet. So it's a very short time, but just looking and talking
it's
to other
so
people.
It's so much work to get involved with someone that they're like, well, we don't want to go through all that trouble again.
Well, and I also think they vet you. I mean, I feel like there's been a couple times where I've been in that vetting process and I've made it to like round 6. And they've decided, yeah, no, we're not going to go with this guy. Whereas in the States, that would never, you would never make it to the 6th meeting and they weren't going to go with you.
Well, and I think also from what you're saying, from our perspective, reinforcing what your boss said, I have that, at least American mentality. My French business is completely different from yours. So we don't have to cultivate these long-term contacts that you do. But the idea is like, look, you get 3 contacts of either you blowing me off or lukewarm and we're done. Like, you're clearly not interested. And we see that as a respectful thing in America. Like, clearly you're not interested. I'm going to respect that. Not, well, you need to get to know me better, right? We'd have to have some insight from someone like, this person takes a while to warm up to you. And we go, oh, okay. So then we'd have a different perspective. But
No, yeah. But everyone takes a longer to get, and it's hard for me because I think I come across as disrespectful and brash and overconfident, and I'm just trying to, which is American, I guess, if you look at the definition of how most people see us. But you know, but then other people, like, we're working a lot with startups, and the startups are like, oh, we love this style of business, you know, where I'm in a meeting and they're like talking and they have an idea and I'm just, that's a bad idea, we shouldn't do that, move on. And they love that they're not going to waste time on things. Startups can't waste time, you know. So there are people that value that kind of American bravado, but most businesses in France, I think they need you to just slow down, have a couple meetings with them, let's go to another coffee. And so I think that's where French companies would mess up in the States. You know, they're expecting to have three meetings with this, you know, potential, you know, supplier or buyer or something, and you know, they don't realize that you're going to have one meeting with this person and you're going to make or break it in that one meeting. So, you know, it's on both cultures, you know, it's kind of a, but it's how it is in France, right? You can't get fired from your job very easily. You can't get fired as a partner very easy. So it's a very long process to get to know you and, you know, kind of become together. So that's been a very big learning curve for me. On the personal side, was that the second question? The only thing my mom is sending us from this, there's two things. It's Tapatio hot sauce.
I was going to say, she's eating salsa or something.
Yeah, and she sends me a giant jug of Hernandez green chili salsa. And I just ran out like 2 days ago of my most recent.
Panic
and this
mode.
This will last me usually about 3 months. And I just ran out, and it's like, oh man, I'm not going back till December. Can I make it 2 months? Because every morning I have three eggs and this salsa on top, and you just quit. So this morning what did I put on it this morning? Put some Tapatio, which is okay, but it's just the textures.
I need salsa.
I'm hot sauce.
We don't sell Americans on salsa, right? Maybe the French, they don't quite get it. But.
Yeah, but it's interesting because I lived in Germany as a 17-year-old as an exchange student, and I remember being so homesick. And I was just younger. I'd never dealt with it, but I'd get so homesick for friends and family. But the stuff I would miss was like Dr. Pepper and Mexican food and greasy hamburgers. And I missed it. It was like I'd lay in bed at night and just kind of like think about it. And I think now it's like I there's really not that much that I miss. Like, there's stuff I would enjoy having, but I don't have that like, oh, I need this. Because it's like there's other things that have replaced it. I go back to the States and I'm like, oh man, I just want a good tartare and a nice glass of red wine at lunch. You know, it's like, just can't find that, right? So there's give and take. You just have to.
It's funny you mentioned Mexican, because I would have never, if you'd asked me to list the top 10 of foods that I love, I would give you four different types of Asian cuisine in that top 10. But Mexican wouldn't have made the top 10. But recently, when I visited the States in June, I didn't realize I am in love with Mexican food. I was like, I need menudo, I need this, I need this. And I was just nuts about it. I wanted tacos, and I'm dreaming of tacos, actually. But it's interesting you mentioned, I want to go back to the idea of timidity. I'm not as advanced in my language studies as you are, not only because you've lived here in a previous life, and you had some chance there with French, but you have a French-speaking wife, so you have lots of opportunities. I've only just yesterday finally started my first formal French class at Alliance Française, and I remember coming home just exhausted because it was 2 hours of just French. There's no English because the assumption, you know, if you're taking a French class in the United States, well, everyone else in the class speaks English, so the teacher can maybe transition to give you a crutch. Well, In my French class, we've got Iranians, a Romanian, someone from Greece. So there's no lingua franca to translate when we just have to have the entire class in French. And so you're taking notes and you're paying attention. I just came back and I was just like, I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted from 2 hours of French. Yep. And then I have all these notes and I have homework. So I found, not just in going out, but in dating, that you're a different person. The French person is a different person. A, because you're just a language barrier, right? You're trying to figure out how you say things, but also you're trying to make sure, I don't want to say that you're not the American in the conversation, but you're being sensitive mm-hmm. to how things are said. A little bit the linguistic version of what you talked about with business is that you have to make sure that you're commenting or you're saying the right thing. And sometimes it's fun to explain an expression to someone. I was telling my friend Claire the other day about the expression "the juice is worth the squeeze," and what that, you know, what that means is an American expression. And she said, we have something in French, but it doesn't really mean the same thing as your expression. And just having fun with that. It's been hard. I'm the life of the party, the person who organizes dinner parties in the United States. And not only have I not been able to do that because my apartment's not big enough.
Yeah.
My apartment's barely big enough for me to live in, much less, you know, have
others to come over. Yeah.
Exactly. So I haven't been able to express that part of my personality, and I've accepted that. But also just being patient with myself. I remember sitting in that class last night and thinking, if you'd asked me this 6 months ago, I'm like, you're only going 2 hours a day. It's got to be 8 hours a day. You've got to be going 5 days a week. Your friend just got to be off the charts. And just being, look, I live here now. You can do it. It's better to be, to get it really right and take your time than to rush through it and say, okay, I've got my certification. I'm C2 now. And for those of you who are listening, if you don't know what that means, there are different grades. There's A1, A2. By the time you get to C2, you're a pretty competent French speaker. But, you know, you're thinking, I've got to be at C2 in 5 minutes. And
oh, yeah.
Look, you're here. Work on your pronunciation. That's one of the toughest things for Americans to master. And then just take your time and enjoy it. You know, you got here somehow. Enjoy it and take your time with that.
And I think holding that curiosity as long as you possibly can, because what I find here is that first month you're like, you want to try. That's probably why I gained so much weight when I moved. You just want to try everything. And, you know, my wife and I keep telling ourselves, we're still tourists, you know, because you want to keep that kind of childlike curiosity over here. And it's fun to learn. I mean, yesterday we were at the butcher, and I've gone to this butcher 50 to 100 times already, and I'm still in there going, what's that? What's that? How do you make that? And they love explaining it. I mean, nobody asked them that all
day. Right, because yeah. Most people just grew up with it.
Yeah, and so I'm learning new things. I know how to now ask for ham that's, like, sliced paper thin, and, you know, just little things like that. And so... it's, yeah, if you think you're going to be a master of the language overnight, that you're just going to get discouraged and you're going to quit learning. So it's kind of looking at this as you're going to keep learning every day.
I also want to go back to originally what you talked about. You know, you said your social life was different. And when I heard you talk about that, I thought, well, people could argue if they're from New York or Portland or Austin, Texas, they'd say, well, you know, Jason, we have that life here. You don't need to go to Paris for that. So I accept that part of that is the big city mentality, but... also, I think you have to fight, even though you haven't been here a very long time, that temptation to get into a routine. I think any human, anywhere we live, once you've gotten things established, like your
yeah.
bank account, or which in France is more difficult to get, we could talk about that maybe in a different episode.
A whole episode on getting
yeah,
a bank account in France.
I could say we could do an entire episode on just on your business startup alone. I think those details would be fascinating to most people. That... you know, sure, you can get that social life, but you can still fall into a routine if you live in Manhattan
mm-hmm.
or if you live in Paris. And that I really enjoyed being around people who've lived in Paris 4, 5, 6 years and saying, have you been here? And I get to introduce them to something because it's just part, I think it's part of who I am. As you said, with the butcher, you're a curious person. You want to learn, you want to know. But the other part is, I think, to try to shake people up and challenge them and say, well, come on, you live here. It's the same thing with Museum Sunday. So first Sundays of the month in Paris. If I'm ever in town, there's not a question. I am going to the museums for free. Like, that's not a question. And it's fascinating to me, especially because a lot of Parisians will tout, you know, they live in one of the cultural centers of the world, which I would accept. But then they don't go when the museums are free. There's no free museum day in New York,
right.
I'll tell you that. And they miss these opportunities.
Well, it's like an Arizonan who's lived there for years and has never been to the Grand Canyon.
Oh.
I'm like, you know, people travel across the world to see that. You know, you need to go check it out. So, no, but I'd say I completely agree with you. And I think what it is we... It was really informative for us because we're coming from Phoenix. We had our routines from Phoenix. And you kind of try to keep them here. And we talked to my wife's cousin. Mom's cousin who lives in Paris has always been a Parisian, and she talked to us about how when she was our age, you know, she was out every night and all of these things. So that kind of helped us, like, oh, it's okay to go out more than it would be in Phoenix, and it's okay to kind of define what we want to do here. But for us, it's creating a routine that includes going out a lot, right? That becomes the routine. Is like, every week are we going to try a new restaurant? Every week are we, you know, going to try to see friends? I mean, we have a group of friends that we try to see every single week, and so you're going to try to see 2 or 3 couples a week every week and be gone every weekend. I mean, your life's pretty active. Going to the fact that you could get this lifestyle in Portland, New York would be the closest maybe, I think. But the thing is that what New York and Portland and Austin don't have is French culture. And the French are, I love them. They, apéro for those of you who don't know what that is like, depends on which house you're at. If you're at my father-in-law's house, it's about 7 o'clock. If you're at our house, it's maybe 8:30. But it's when you have a drink before dinner. Or if you're at our house, you have 3 drinks before dinner. And there's little things to nibble on to kind of get you hungry. They call them grignoter. And doing that and being okay to do that with friends, and it's, I guess it's kind of like happy hour on a weeknight, but it's totally acceptable.
For no reason whatsoever. Yeah, just go to Mayo.
No, it's just, it's let's go have a perro, and you sit outside when it's, I mean, that's the other thing is the weather changes here. Like, it, you know, I'm from Phoenix, so the weather never changed. It got hot and hotter. But you sit outside if it's not freezing cold, and you enjoy the outside.
Even if it is cold, you might put a blanket on.
You just put a blanket on or sit under the heater and smoke, and yeah. So, but the French, they just, and so you have, you know, aperitif, and if you go out with friends, it's not that you're required to go have dinner with them. If it's for apero, it's just apero, and then at, you know, 9 o'clock, you're done, 9:30, you're done, you leave. You know, there's not that. I feel like sometimes in the States, you kind of feel like if you go out with friends, you kind of finish the night with them, or, you know, or if they come over to your house for apero, that they're going to stick around for dinner, and you got to figure out what to feed them. No, they all know to just kind of get up and leave when it's time to leave. And that kind of, you know, I love that. And then to have the dinners, I mean, we go to restaurants, and I mean, you're expected to be there for 2-3 hours. I mean, that's what we go to restaurants on Saturday night for. And it's, you know, the restaurant's not trying to get you out. They don't even plan on somebody coming in after you. They know you're going to sit there the rest of the night. And I just love that. I mean, you don't, there are people that do that in New York and in other parts of the world, but the French, everyone's doing it. Like, you're not special doing it like that. You look around and it's the same people sitting next to you when you get up after dessert as the ones you sat down.
Yeah, it's a completely different set of assumptions. I remember, one of my employees told me the story, but she was trying to go into a restaurant and the proprietor said, well, just an FYI, we close in like 90 minutes. Like, well, I mean, seriously, you're not going to try to eat dinner in 90 minutes.
Right.
What are you, an American?
Yeah, exactly.
And so, and just to change that, yeah, it's okay to have a 2-3 hour dinner on a Wednesday because that's what dinner is about. That's what enjoyment is about. And brings it back to that concept of, it isn't that there aren't Americans who know how to live the good life in that way.
Yeah, I'm not saying
but
that.
But here, it's standard. You're the outlier if you think that dinners are meals are an afterthought or an inconvenient part of your day, or what you eat doesn't matter, or any variety. I mean, although piquant for me is the dirty little secret of the French, which maybe would be a different.
I don't know why they're not making billions of dollars in the United States right now. It is the coolest thing ever. When the first time you see piquant, you're like, why is it? Why aren't? Ah, we should have this in America. We love frozen food.
So again, obviously, we've been talking about your injection string can and what you're doing here, and the examining, you know, what you miss, what you don't miss. Can I ask, you know, what's changed for you? So you said you do miss some things, you don't miss some things. Do you find you, and if you want to speak for your wife, changing an attitude about whether it be something as basic as, you know, kids or your outlook or your travel or goals, you know, the inevitable clash of cultures, different countries, lifestyle, all of this can't have happened. And you had a spectacular run of vacations here recently, you know.
Weekends, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
so I get to, the wonderful thing about Facebook is, even when you're not with your friends, you can, so it's been months since I've seen you. And I've been able to track, you know, I knew where you were at this beach. I knew that you went to see this cool market in Morocco. And so I got a chance to maybe go with you on some of those adventures. And
I forgot we went to Morocco. Yeah, you're right.
So you've had this spectacular run. And I should add, that is not available to people in New York. So whatever cool city you live in the United States, you do not get to go to another country by taking a bus for 20 euros.
Yeah.
So you can do that here. You can get on a bus and be in a different country. And that's sort of the default reason for why Europeans might be, quote unquote, more cosmopolitan. It's accidentally possible. You can trip and fall into a different country.
Yeah.
Whereas in the United States, you've got to get on a plane. You've got to somehow work out that you get more than 2 weeks of vacation. Come over here. It's a $1,000 proposition just to get here.
Yeah.
You know. So I understand that Americans will say, well, Stephen, it's not that easy. I understand it's not that easy because I used to live over on that side with you. But now that you're here and now that you have all these opportunities, do you find yourself changing as a person either for good or ill? And
I've become an evil, horrible person since I've moved
here. So what's it like to be a terrible person now that you've lived in France for 14 months?
Let me think. So, yeah, wow. So I think my mom was just out here, so I wonder what she would say. I think if I had to talk to my mom about this, I think she would say things that have changed. So I come from Phoenix, where it's completely acceptable to wear flip-flops and cargo jeans or cargo shorts to everything. You know, it's like, come over for my dinner party, cargo shorts and tennis shoes. It's living in a bigger city, but I mean, Paris is a very fashionable city. And so I've spent more money on clothes this year than I would say I did my entire 20s. And it's because I think there's two factors running. One, people are just really well-dressed here. I don't know if you've picked...
I have more scarves than I've ever bought in my life.
How do you know you're Parisian? You're wearing a scarf in the summer. You definitely want to dress better. The other thing is that when you're in meetings, you hate to be the worst dressed person there. So you're always trying to kind of be at the same level as, you know, people you're doing business with. And once you start dressing nice, you just start seeing other people dress nice, and it's kind of a perpetual thing. So I think I definitely spend more time on fashion, which I never thought I would say. I mean, I've never thought of dressing nice. It's never been something I thought much of. So that's been something that's changed. I started drinking coffee. I'd never drank coffee in my life, and
So was that just... Because coffee's getting better in America.
It wasn't that. So for me, I still don't love the taste of coffee. I'm learning. I'm thinking of it like scotch. Like I had to kind of drink scotch with Coke at first, and then now I love scotch straight up. And so I'm kind of like, I'm on cappuccinos right now, so I don't even know if that counts as coffee. But in the States, I like my caffeine, and I got my caffeine through non-sweetened iced tea, right? And I could stop at a Circle K on my way into work, drop 99 cents on the table, and walk out with a 44-ouncer, and it was good for a couple hours, right? That wasn't possible in the States. So I started drinking Coke Zero, and I was starting to drink more and more and more of those. And so it's more of a, this can't be good for me. I should get my caffeine from somewhere else. And since iced tea is not an option, I've like tried to make myself drink coffee. And also because it looks delicious. I mean, it's like you see a cappuccino, you're like, somebody just gets that for breakfast. Like, it looks like ice cream. Like, I want that, you know? So it looks great. There's cafes on every corner here. And so it's like, yeah, I want to have a reason to sit down in the morning and have something hot. So I started drinking coffee. What else? I mean, yeah, it's just, you're definitely more conscious of what's happening in the world. I mean, I was fortunate enough to travel quite a bit before we lived here. But like you said, like we were in Morocco. You just drop into North Africa. It's almost, if you get a good price on the tickets, it's almost cheaper to leave Paris for the weekend, you know, and not go out to dinner and lunch and all that stuff.
If you rent your place out on Airbnb,
and you take an Airbnb when you get, well, we have friends in Morocco, but, you know, it's almost cheaper to be in Morocco for the weekend than to stay in Paris, and it's a 3.5-hour flight, you know what I mean? So, yeah, the world seems a little bit smaller here, for sure. That's definitely how we think about it, and I think we try to enjoy life more. I mean, my wife, like I said, she's working more than she did in the States. I'm definitely working more than I did in the States. And so when that weekend does come up, I mean, we really try to unplug. Whereas in the States, we'd be on our phones, we'd be on the iPhone. I mean, I just took my first vacation ever without taking my computer. And it was amazing. You know, you disconnect, you plan for it, you prep your team for it, and you do it, and you realize the rest of the world doesn't end if you're not online. And so I think we think about life different. It's that working really hard, but then playing really hard and playing completely where you're not still kind of, you know, still plugged into work. So we tried to really, you know, really separate the two, work and play.
And when you say play, I think part of the time when we're out I don't think we've ever discussed the extent of our travels. I know that we're both fairly well traveled within Europe, but I still, no matter how many, so Croatia was, I don't know, the 16th, 17th country I've been to in Europe. And I was just there this weekend. And I still feel like this isn't real. Like, hold on, I'm in another country, I'm going to be able to come back sometime soon. It isn't like, I just came, so now I live here in Europe. It's like, well, I can come back. Like, I don't have to say this, you know, maybe in 10 years I'll be back. And it's still weird. I don't know if you find this sensation, you know. You're like, well, I was in Berlin this weekend, or, you know, you take long layovers sometimes. You're like, well, I'll just hang out in Dusseldorf for 5 or 6 hours and see what there is to see. That there's still an unreal quality to all of that. Whereas in America, even if you go to really cool places, the sense is, well, you know, we're all part of the same, you know, culture that has everything. And you're in Morocco in 3.5 hours, you know. You could probably still be in Texas with that flight time.
Oh, yeah. You're in Sicily another 3.5 hours the other direction, you know. And, yeah, I come from an extremely small town in Arizona, 5,000 people. Like, my graduating class was like 87 of us, you know, I mean, really small town. And I still have those moments where I'm like, how did this happen? Like this morning was a good, I posted a picture on Twitter. It was like, I'm walking across the bridge from Ile de la Cité across over into the, you know, on the right bank. And yeah, and I'm looking at the river go by, and I just left Hotel de la Zone, and it's this beautiful, you know, Louis the, well, I forget which number he was, you know, time built in. It's just gorgeous, and I had a meeting there, and now I'm walking across this river, and there you see the tower kind of off in the distance, and it's smoke's coming off the river, and it's fall, and the leaves are falling, and you're like, how is this my walk to work this morning? Like, I don't know how this happened. I'm very thankful that it did. And yeah, it does. It feels just surreal sometimes. A lot of times, like, we'll grab an Uber on the way home, and because I spend so much time in the underground, you don't really see the city. And then when you take that Uber home that one time, you're driving through, and you're just like, it's just monument after monument that you just grew up kind of seeing in movies, and you're like, wow, I'm going home. And it's, you know, it's here. I'm in Paris. Yeah, you're right. It is kind of, it is still surreal, and I hope it stays that way. And I know it could get kind of like, you know, ah, I've seen the Eiffel Tower. You know, I've seen that before, you know, but I hope it doesn't, because it's just, it's really special to be here. And yeah, you're right. Like, I mean, we just dropped down to Sicily, you know, and I'm eating a cannoli in Palermo, and it's just like, well, this is cool. You know, I didn't think this was going to happen in my lifetime, you know? So yeah, it's just, it's, I'm extremely lucky, and I'm just trying to enjoy it as much as I can.
Well, and I said previously,
hope my team in the States doesn't hear this. They're gonna be like, that jerk, he's like globetrotting in Europe.
We'll make sure to send them the link to the podcast directly.
They're all gonna be applying for jobs out here next.
So again, I mentioned that it, you know, months since I've seen you, we live in the same city. We probably don't live very far apart in number of miles, but just intersecting lives and travel, you know, you like to get away on the weekend, so do I, and seems that we miss each other. So I would love to have you back on the pod for episodes to break down some of these smaller grain things you talk about. I would love to talk about, you know, startup culture here in France versus the United States and
love
other things.
To.
So hoping that we hit you on future pods. But to wrap up today's episode, I want to tap you for some advice. So people are listening, okay, Jason's living this great life. Steven sounds like life is awesome. Okay, I want to do it. Where do I sign? What's some advice, both practical things that, you know, you're glad you did, and then other things that you think, well, I didn't really need to do that, or that was an unfounded fear. And we can't give the comprehensive list today.
Right.
But, you know, just a few things off the top of your head that that people who are going to relocate, who want to, you know, maybe they also have a wife who works or a husband who works and listening to this, are like, well, how do I, you know, that's nice that Jason and his wife are able to pull that off, but, you know, assume that they're able to make something like that happen. What are some tips?
Yeah, so I think that if you're doing this with a partner, you need to really take the time to dig deep into the what-ifs. Not because the what-ifs are going to happen, but because if they do happen, you need to have kind of a plan in place for them. So, for example, you know, what if you get over to Paris and you hate it? Like, just the life, the commute every morning to work and the language barrier, whatever it is, you just hate it. I mean, how long do we give it that we stick around and you know, fight it out and hopefully make it better? You know
what was your guys' timeline for that?
So our what if was, you know, what if this business doesn't come off? You know, what if StreamCan's office doesn't kick off? And then it's like, well, then you have to look for a job, you know, in a French company. And, you know, so we walked through those what ifs, and it was like kind of, you know, and so we gave ourselves 2 years. We said we would stay here for 2 years and we'd kind of reassess. That's if, you know, things didn't go well. We've hit the year and a quarter mark, and we're planning on staying around for a while. Business is going well. Wife is enjoying her job. You know, things are good, so we're sticking around. But I've seen other expat couples where it's just, it's a lot harder than I'm making it sound on this podcast, you know? And I think if you would have caught me on maybe a day in March last year, or early this year, I might have given you a different story.
Well,
you know,
I remember talking to you before, I think one of your colleagues here came over to launch a bunch of initiatives, and I know it was just a big run-up for you up to that time, but I knew that you were projecting this, you know, I hope that it's going to, and I knew that you had a lot of things in the pipeline, but you were waiting for things to come to fruition. And
you do realize when you get to a new country, it's like, you know, if I'm in the States, I'm going to buy a car, right? I call my, I'm going to have a cousin or an uncle or a friend whose friend works at the car dealership who can talk to, and you know you have someone to go to, right? You show up in a new city, you have no people, you have no network, you have nothing. You really don't. You have nothing. And so you realized how valuable the network that you've put together over the years is. And so showing up to France with no network, I mean, trying to get business meetings when, you know, your language skills are rusty and you're nobody. I mean, they don't never even heard of you. And, you know, I mean, like, yeah, it's a very scary place to be. And I think I'm so bright and sunny about it now because I kind of made it through, I think, the hardest parts. And so I think that anyone who's planning on moving abroad and thinks it's going to be just cake is going to be really disappointed. And so luckily I had lived abroad before. My wife had lived abroad. I remember my wife, you know, being homesick living in the States. You know, so I expected that to happen to me. And it did. I mean, I miss Arizona terribly. I mean, I'm going back in December and I cannot wait. I mean, I miss being able to go hiking outside the city in 15 minutes. I mean, I can't do that in
Paris. Well, I would miss the Grand Canyon if I was
here. Yeah, I mean, Lake Powell or, you know, the Sedona or whatever, you know, whatever I miss. I miss friends, miss family. I miss, you know, you miss that. You miss going, I miss barbecues. Oh my God, nobody barbecues here because you can't put a barbecue on a balcony in Paris. You know what I mean? So.
Well, plus they don't have barbecue skills.
No, like, they just burn it. They don't know what they're doing.
That's
well,
I
can fix that.
Do that well.
I'm going to give you a tip. I know how to fix. Okay, so the problem with French barbecues, I'm going way off, but I have to share this with your podcast listeners. So in France, it works. Everyone's at a paro. I explained that earlier. That's the beginning of dinner. So about halfway through a paro, the wife gives the husband a nod, like, get outside and get the barbecue going. So he runs out there and he gets the barbecue going. So at this time, he's outside by himself, and everyone else is inside drinking, having a good time. And so his goal is to get that meat cooked to a edible place as quick as possible. And so if it's sausages, he's poking holes in it and they're burning. If it's, you know, if it's steak, it's just charred, you know. If it's hamburgers, you know, you're gonna eat them as rare as they possibly can be. And so I would think about this. I see my brother-in-law's outside just burning stuff, and I'm like, why are they doing this? And it dawned on me, I'm like, they were missing all the fun. And so my family, if my in-laws, there is a running rule. This goes to uncles, aunt, you know, anytime a male is outside barbecuing, every male in the house is required to be outside with a glass of wine or whatever it is with them.
So people can actually cook their food.
It is amazing. That temperature gets dropped and they slow it down. And they're like, this isn't that bad. This is kind of fun barbecuing. And that's how it is in the States, right? You got your beer. Everyone's kind of standing around. The guys
that's
are all talking about it.
That's how you do barbecue.
Yeah, and that's the key to barbecuing is cooking it slower. And the barbecuing in my family has gone... just it's gotten exponentially better because you got to parse everybody outside, and the guys like it. It's kind of fun. The girls actually like us leaving them alone for an hour. So it's, yeah, little things like that. And I forget what I was talking about, but I miss things in the States. And so I think if you're an expat or if you're thinking about living this expat life, it's not for everyone. I would talk to people who have done it, and I'd be very realistic as to what it's going to be like, because the grass is always greener, always. And you know, I'm happy where I'm at now, but I wasn't. This entire year hasn't been cake. There's been some really rough spots, and so just be open to that and be aware of it. And you know, nothing worth doing is easy.
It's funny, I'd shared with you pre-pod that I had gone through my sort of crisis moment about France this summer, and I think that that's probably characteristic of any person who wants to stay in France long-term. So I'm not talking about someone who has a diplomatic appointment and they're here for 3 years and they know they're going somewhere else. So there's not really, you don't have to have an existential crisis because they know, well, I'm going to get moved on. I can't really complain about my three-year assignment. I have it, or if I'm here for a corporation, it's a one or two or three-year thing. You don't have to have a crisis. You don't have to think about things because you aren't relocating permanently. Whereas you were thinking about building this new life, you go through that. I think anyone who, whether it's France or anywhere else, you go through that either one or a series of crises that test your commitment to what it is that you want. And ultimately, the gap between what you thought it was going to be and what it ends up actually being.
Mm-hmm.
And so in some ways, I'm very glad that we weren't able to connect when I first asked to do the podcast, which was back in March, which was I was still in the lead up to the resolution of my crisis.
And you tried to reschedule tonight, man. That would have put us on another 4 month run.
I knew, I said,
you see that text, like, dude, no, we just need to do it today.
Yeah, well, that's the problem with scheduling. It's the end of the quarter today. So, I knew that if we weren't going to get it done, we wouldn't, because it is a big city life. We are in Paris. You're running a startup. I'm running a startup. And that's how life is. And I'm hoping it won't be four more months before we have another conversation like this. But
I hope so too.
I really think the big takeaway from that last segment is that concept of nothing in life is that's worth doing is easy. But more importantly, that this has an ability to shape and change you and challenge you in ways that few things in life are, that are available to. So for example, as something that would be equivalent might be joining the military, where your entire world will change. Mm-hmm. And it starts with this crucible of an event called boot camp, right? So by the same token, relocating is going to change your concepts about everything. How you eat, when you go to sleep, how you talked about your different business practices, you know, challenge, you know, what is it that's really important to me? And so it's worth doing if you're willing to take all of those risks. There's definitely a fear factor for all of us.
Right.
Think you would say you're fearless or I'm not fearless. It's just a matter of managing that and keeping your eye on, you know, what it is. Why are you here in the first place?
And, you know, something I did before we left is I wrote down the worst case, like, what's the worst thing that can happen? And I really went through, like, what is the absolute worst thing? And I looked at it and thought, okay, can I handle that? You know, am I willing to take that? That's the worst thing that could happen, right? And for me, it was like, you get over there, it doesn't work out. You kind of have to come home as not a failure, but as a, you know, you weren't able to succeed on your big trip over to Europe. And, you know, you're looked down on and you get a new job in the States and you kind of have to start over. And maybe you're not as far in your career as you wanted to be, right? And I looked at that and thought, okay, but the upsides are this. I have this amazing opportunity. I open a successful business over there. I get to experience France. We get to do all. And it was like, that's a no-brainer. I've got to try this, you know. If some other things would have been different, you know, we might not have tried it. I mean, you need to balance that out and look at what could happen and what could happen and are the negatives and the positives, you know, worth the jump. And so I think just going eyes wide open is very important.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's Jason McDonald. You can tweet him at stringcaneu, all one word. Tell him that you appreciate his perspective, you hated his perspective, whatever you want to say. He's very active on Twitter. He'll get back to you. He'll send you a cool picture of what he was doing or what river he was crossing earlier today.
Yeah.
And hopefully he'll welcome him back to a future episode of The American in Paris, the English-speaking perspective on the City of Light. Again, Jason, thanks so much for taking the time to be here, despite my trying to reschedule at the last minute. And we hope to have you on in a future episode.
I would love to join you again. Thank you so much. And all of you listening, come visit us in Paris. It's a great city.
And it's a cool, all that noise you've been hearing in the podcast. We're on a very busy, cool intersection. We might just go for a little apero right now. So.
I think it's apero. I think you're right.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.